Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a couple of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a portent that a criminal regime will soon take over in Mexico and speak with John Ackerman, a professor at the Institute for Legal Research at the National Autonomous University of Mexico and a columnist for Proceso magazine and La Jornada newspaper. We will discuss the frontrunner in the July 1st presidential elections, the pre-candidate Enrique Peña Nieto, who apparently is corrupt, has authoritarian tendencies, and is, according to the late Carlos Fuentes, too ignorant to be president of Mexico. Then we will hear the speech that the conference forum TED, that's Technology, Entertainment, Design, did not want to release to the public because they considered it too controversial in a political year, but were forced to do so by popular demand, making it available at TED.com, where it has since gone viral. The banned and unbanned speaker, Nicholas Hanauer, a serial entrepreneur who was the first non-family investor in Amazon.com, joins us to share his ideas about what is wrong with American capitalism and how to fix it. A member of the 1%, his arguments eviscerate Mitt Romney's and Paul Ryan's trickle-down economic ideology and budget plans that insist the wealthy should not be taxed because they are the job creators. Nick Hanauer is the author of the new book, The Gardens of Democracy. Let's now go to Mexico City. And joining us now is Dr. John Ackerman, who's a professor at the Institute for Legal Research at the National Autonomous University of Mexico and editor-in-chief of the Mexican Law Review and a columnist for Proceso magazine and La Jornada newspaper. He blogs at johnackerman.blogspot.com. Welcome to Background Briefing, John Ackerman.
Ian, a pleasure to speak with you.
And you're down there in Mexico City, and you have an article in Tuesday's Los Angeles Times that really paints, I think, for the first time, an accurate picture of who the leading contender for the next president of Mexico is, the pre-party candidate. And I imagine it's not going to make you very popular in Mexico.
Well, it depends on who you ask. Listen, this is there's actually a sea change in public opinion down here in Mexico. Very interesting. Peña Nieto's the candidate of the old guard sort of authoritarian party, which ruled Mexico for over 70 years and was kicked out in 2000 by the PAN, the center-right, right-wing Christian Democratic Party. And now is wanting to come back in 2012, the election of July 1st. And Peña Nieto, who's the candidate for this pre-party, has been way ahead in the polls for, you know, 2 or 3 years. They were really counting on riding this up through the campaign into the elections. The campaign formally started on March 30th. And the first few weeks of the campaign seemed like they were going to be pretty smooth for Peña Nieto. He was just kind of roll into the presidency on July 1st. But then all of a sudden, things changed, Ian. Just about a week and a half ago, Peña Nieto decided to go and visit one of the elite private universities here in Mexico City, the Universidad Iberoamericana, and was literally run out by the students. He was greeted with boos and loud criticisms of his policies. And after he finished talking, he was quite adamantly booed by the majority of the student body. This wasn't just a small group of students. This was really the majority of the people who were attending there. And the thing is that Peña Nieto's candidacy has been constructed through the media, through, you know, public image campaigns. He's, you know, relatively young. He's supposed to be good-looking. He's married to an actress, a soap opera actress. And so they've constructed this whole idea of him being kind of a modern guy. But the youth in particular are not buying this. And I think this has a lot to do with social networks, with the new generation of youth, which is coming up in Mexico from perhaps smaller families, better education. And they're not quite buying into this idea of a TV candidate. They want someone with ideas and proposals. And what I write today in the LA Times is that Peña Nieto really doesn't represent a new face for the PR. I mean, he is literally a new face. He's a new person, but his agenda and the way in which he's governed in the past really represents the old PRI, not the new PRI.
And the old PRI is a kind of a criminal mafia with the kind of power and cynicism of the Soviet regime, which lasted about the same period of time as the PRI rule. And they were obviously in their rule, they were in cahoots with all kinds of criminality at both the federal and the state levels in Mexico. I take it then that what's going on here is that the more that this PRI candidate Enrique Peña Nieto is smoked out, the less there is of him. It's a bit like what happened here in the Republican primary with Governor Perry of Texas, who was touted as a new face and a rising hope, and he was the leading candidate there for a while until they had debates and people suddenly discovered that this sort of telegenic, glad-handing governor was as dumb as a bag of hammers.
Exactly, and I think you put it a lot better than I could have ever put it. That's exactly what's happening. He has really tried to avoid debate, and the thing is here in Mexico, he has on his side the television and the radio. The television and radio is highly concentrated in Mexico. Two companies control, 95% of the viewers. Cable is still not universalized, and these two companies have pretty obviously made a pact with Peña Nieto, and so they're helping him. So, for instance, they have not convened a single debate between the candidates. Fortunately, by law, for the first time in Mexican history, by law, there has to be two debates. There's been one, which Peña Nieto did pretty badly in, and there'll be another one on June 10th. We'll see what happens. But there should be a debate, every week. Look at the Republican primaries in the United States, in which the candidates talk about ideas and proposals. And this just isn't happening. He has the television companies on his side, and this has delayed the possibility of society sort of realizing who he really is and what his ideas or lack of ideas are. But this is happening now. The question is whether there's time between now and the elections. Elections are coming up. It's July 1st. We have 5 weeks now. Things are happening. This weekend, Ian, there were four separate youth student marches in Mexico City and actually throughout the country, and some of them even globally. On Friday, a group of elite students from elite universities, mostly private universities, the five most important private universities in Mexico City, marched to Televisa, which is the principal television company, to protest against the lack of information and the biased reporting. Then on Saturday, there was a large march all downtown Mexico City, which was an anti-Peña Nieto march. We've never seen this before in the history of Mexico, during a campaign of a civil society march, which was not organized by any party or any candidate, but specifically directed against Peña Nieto. And then on Sunday and Monday, López Obrador, who is a candidate, had two major student rallies both on Sunday and Monday, which is also new because he had not been particularly getting close to the youth vote. The youth had been with Peña Nieto, but that looks like it's changing very quickly.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. John Ackerman, who's professor at the Institute for Legal Research at the National Autonomous University in Mexico, editor-in-chief of the Mexican Law Review, and a columnist for Proceso magazine and La Jornada newspaper. Televisa, of course, would be the equivalent of what Fox News is as the mouthpiece for the Republican Party or the Pravda of the Republican Party. Televisa has always been the mouthpiece for the PRI party, and of course, one of the founder of Televisa, of course, was a former president, a pre-president. So they're totally in the bag. But what about Ricardo Salinas' Azteca? Why are they in the bag?
First of all, Televisa is by far, Fox News would probably be a good comparison in terms of the way in which they do reporting, but Fox News is one among various channels. Televisa itself controls 80% of the market. Azteca, Salinas Pliego is the other 15%. So really, Televisa is hugely dominant in the telecommunications, basically television market. And now, Televisa, which is the other company, why would they be the Peña Nieto? Well, because they are particularly angry about the electoral reform, which was passed a few years ago. Now, the electoral reform, what this does is prohibit although this has existed before, but in 2007 in particular, there's been a much more clear prohibition about the purchasing of political advertisements on television and radio. Today in Mexico, it is totally illegal to purchase television political advertisements. There are public times which are doled out between the different candidates, and this has implied a major limitation on the amount of money which is going into the coffers of TV Azteca and Televisa, and Peña Nieto has promised to bring the money back. You know, and so this is really a question of economic interest. More than ideology. Sure. Or
yeah, it sounds like it's something akin to Ronald Reagan getting rid of the fairness doctrine that imposed a level playing field on the big TV companies. And now, of course, you know, all the money that American politicians raise from the special interests and, of course, sell their souls in the process, that all goes to television. And our television monopolies in this country, although they're not as there's not one monopoly like Televisa, they, of course, are benefiting from our corrupt and broken political system. So, that's a little speech, I'm afraid, there.
No, it's fine. I mean, but it is important to notice that there is something very positive about Mexican democracy, because we're used to hearing, you know, bad news about Mexico, and here's more bad news. The guy who's ahead of the polls is an old guard authoritarian guy. But actually, there is something very important in terms of this prohibition and at least the legal protections against the intervention of private money in the political sphere. We have on the books, at least, a very good electoral law, which is supposed to create a quality and a level playing field between the candidates. One of the scandals is precisely that Peña Nieto has been going outside of this regulation and trying to pay off the television stations on the side and all this kind of stuff. And so, and in the United States in particular, he's also had a very important sort of PR campaign, giving interviews and trying to get the U.S. media also on his side. And so that's why we felt it was important to also try to write something in the U.S. press in addition to just writing what we write all the time in the Mexican press.
Well, you've in the Los Angeles Times, you've described Peña Nieto as a wolf in sheep's clothing, that he represents the old corrupt political class. And then you go through the list of the states that the PRI has run and all of the corruption involving the governors, the kind of caciques who are totally in bed with organized crime. And, of course, these generals that were just recently arrested with ties to the drug traffickers. And then, of course, on the personal side, the fact that he's fathered a son in an extramarital affair and has come under fire from the boy's mother for being an irresponsible parent, presumably not paying child support. Again, none of this is appearing in the mainstream press, but it's somehow coming through the alternative press. I mean, when you make the analogies as you did in your article in the Los Angeles Times, John Ackerman, starting out by saying the Mexican version of the old Soviet Politburo is poised to make a comeback. Ironically, of course, what's happening in Russia today with the return of the PRI in Russia in the form of Putin and the control of the media that he and the judiciary that he's brought about, you have the same phenomenon. You have state media that it's all propaganda, but then the younger generation and the professionals are all communicating via social media and the internet.
Yeah, there's lots of parallels, and I think this is really important. People have been wondering why in Mexico we haven't had sort of more of a youth mobilization based on social networks and Twitter, Facebook, all that kind of stuff. But it's starting to happen. The numbers of internet users in Mexico have doubled over the last 2 or 3 years, and it's a very similar situation to Russia, right? The old authoritarian, corrupt state was not changed by the new leaders who came in through democratic transition. There are elections now, but there have always been elections in Mexico, Ian. This is one of the things about the Mexican system people aren't aware of sometimes. They think that pre-ruled through dictators who didn't go to elections, but this is wrong. Mexico's always had elections throughout the 20th century, and they've always been kind of fake, fraudulent elections, but they've always been trying to give this sort of gloss of legitimacy. And in many ways, we continue with the same path. Now it's called democracy, it's not called authoritarianism, but the electoral campaigns are also manipulated, and there are serious problems and accusations of fraud. 6 years ago, Ian, I remember talking to you on this very same program about the very problematic elections in July of 2006, in which even though the difference between the first and second place was half a percentage point, the electoral authorities simply refused to do a widespread or a full recount of the vote, leaving a huge shadow of doubt on whether Calderon had actually won in 2006. And so Peña Nieto is sort of falling into a similar kind of way of doing politics that we've known for a long time in Mexico, and is similar to Russia and other places. We really need to insist on democracy going beyond just the celebration of elections to actually involve a new way of relating between government and citizens. And this has not happened yet in Mexico.
And, of course, the PRI had created an extraordinary patronage system that, as you pointed out, they were constantly reelected. And not surprisingly, you know, for example, in the rural areas, the poor farmers who have marginal land, they would get fertilizer if they voted for PRI, which they needed for their survival. So they had all kinds, you know, institutionally, they'd worked out all kinds of schemes to essentially buy the vote, but either overtly or covertly.
And exactly, and what we write about in this article is also we have to look at the subnational level in Mexico, right? So the PRI left power in 2000 at the national level, but at the states, there are 31 states in the federal districts, so 32 states basically. And out of those 32 states, 10 of them have not undergone democratic transition yet. There are 10 states in which the PRI continues in power. They've been in power for the last 80 years now. There has not been an alternation with another party. And these governors really rule as if it were, 40, 50 years ago. And Peña Nieto is one of those. That's the central argument of this piece. The state of Mexico, which is a state, which is around Mexico City, is a state which has always been ruled by the PRI. Peña Nieto himself was the most recent governor, left a few months ago as governor of the PRI. And this is one of the places in the country which is at the top in terms of corruption, at the bottom in terms of transparency. Violence has been particularly strong there in this wave of violence throughout the country over the last few years. And so it's just, a call of alert to the United States observers of Mexico to not be fooled by, this wolf in sheep's clothing. Yeah.
Well, just in closing, John Ackerman, surely the U.S., at least the drug war establishment must be alarmed if the idea is that, apparently the Mexican people are absolutely exhausted by the violence. And clearly, the idea that the PRI would come back and they'd make some deal with the cartels to stop the violence and the money and the drugs would flow, that's not going to sit well with the Drug Enforcement Administration, although clearly they have a symbiotic relations with wanting to keep the war on drugs going to justify their existence, and that's why they resist any alternatives to the failed war on drugs. However, you'd think that would in itself be a wake-up call for America. I mean, sharing a border with a state run by criminals is not exactly an appetizing prospect.
Sure, Ian. Although I wonder about what the priorities are really in terms of U.S. government foreign policy towards Mexico. My impression is that what U.S. the Obama administration, the Bush administration in general, the foreign policy establishment in the United States is particularly concerned about is having Mexican government top officials who are friendly to the United States, who share information with the United States, and who are willing to take orders from the United States at the specific moments. That seems to me the priority, because if it was really corruption control that was the number one priority in terms of the U.S. foreign policy establishment, Calderon would not have been able to continue on these 5-6 years doing the things the way he's been doing. He has done absolutely nothing in terms of corruption. These generals, for instance, who are now finally arrested, had been appointed to by the DEA 4 years ago, in 2008, even early 2007, in a couple of cases, they had told Calderon that they were after these guys. They were very suspicious of them, these high-ranking generals in the U.S. military, and Calderon did nothing. Until now, that it's in his interest to intervene in the electoral campaigns in this way, for electoral purposes more than anything else. And so, the United States has never been, at least in the last few years in the drug war, has not insisted on the issue of corruption as a number one priority. So, perhaps they're not too concerned about that point. What they really want is for Peña Nieto, whoever else coming in, to have a cordial relationship with the United States establishment, which is fine. But in the end, the problem is that what we really do need in Mexico is combating corruption. So that would be something we should think about in terms of people in the United States working on policy towards Latin America. There's been lots of emphasis on human rights, and that's really important too. But the corruption piece really should be an important plank in the civil society agenda towards Latin America as well.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Dr. John Ackerman.
Thank you, Ian. A pleasure and honor.
Again, I was speaking with Dr. John Ackerman, who's a professor at the Institute for Legal Research at the National Autonomous University of Mexico, editor-in-chief of the Mexican Law Review, and a columnist for Proceso magazine and La Jornada newspaper. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with a billionaire who was banned from TED, the TED website, even though he gave a very popular speech. We'll be hearing the speech in a moment and also talking with this billionaire who completely shreds the Republican and Mitt Romney narrative of trickle-down economics and that the billionaires in this country are job creators.
Politic needs votes. Politic needs your mind. Politic needs human beings. Politic needs lies.